I think it was in the second week of the October running where I did a run on the Friday and I ended up doing 7 miles or something, and I wasn't happy with it because I finished it and I thought I could have done a bit more, but I chose to actually to call it a day that day. Then it didn't sit right with me that evening, so the next morning I was up again and I did 11 miles to make up for it, and that felt really, really good. And then I was up again the next day and I did an extra 10 just to counteract that the shortfall on the Friday. I had set an objective, but I didn't achieve it that day. And then if I carried on with this behavior, then that would not have taken me to the end of the 100 miles by the month. So I had to literally go big and do the opposite. And because of that decision I made on the Saturday, I completed 28 miles that weekend. And that set me in good stride for the weekend after when I did the 30 in the one day. You're listening to the Underdog Way podcast with me, Ruben Pillai, where I interview amazing guests who face adversity, overcome challenges, and found their purpose. We share stories to inspire change. Remember, your change will begin when you turn inspiration into action. This episode is brought to you in partnership with the Stop Holding Back Foundation, a charity really close to my heart that is focused on the personal development of people who stutter. A big shout out to everyone part of the SHB family. I love you all and thank you for the support. Every corner twice as bright, there'll be my treasures forever. When I can't hold you tight, I'll see the Stockholm lights. The Stockholm lights, the Stockholm lights. Welcome back to the Underdog Way podcast. Ruben here yet again for episode 11. I thought it would be pretty cool for the penultimate episode of the season to literally be all about me. So I get previous guest Callum Schofield to kindly interview me. So you can also find this episode on his own podcast, The Schofield Stories, where I'm one of the ordinary guests amongst his star-studded lineup. But we get into a really good conversation about some of our common experiences around stuttering and my personal journey and stuff about the charity as well, which is pretty big, pretty important to me. And this was recorded maybe a month ago or a month and a half, and there's been some new developments personally since then, which I will be sharing in due course in regards to public speaking and that kind of stuff. But for the time being, just enjoy this episode of the Underdog Way podcast with me, Ruben Pillai. Enjoy. Thank you very much.
Just a bit of housekeeping for any listeners, that you are the third founding member of Stop Holding Back. So I've now completed the full set.
Yeah, that is correct. You have completed the Holy Trinity. But if I'm being completely honest, they actually came up with the idea themselves initially. And then during kind of formation, they brought me along. They sold me the dream. I bought it. And now we're here.
And now we're here. So where did you sort of come from? Because I've heard the stories of how AO and CJ were working together, and of course CJ's father planted the seed. But in the interviews with both AO and CJ, there was no mention of where you came from in the nicest way possible.
No, it's all very good. So first time I met AO was around, I think, 3.5 years ago, and we met each other on a speech course in one of the communities, and this was like really early on for both of us actually, but more so for him. So I think this was before he had even heard of the name John Harrison and all that kind of stuff. And we like became friends and just kept seeing each other regularly afterwards. And this like just carried on over the next year. We spent quite a bit of time with each other, and we kind of grew together as well, because there were a couple of us who were into reading a bit deeper into things and investigating a bit more. It was handy that we all lived in London as well, so we could casually meet up on a weekend every now and then. And yeah, we just became mates pretty much. And when AO started to coach, to mentor CJ, he would handpick who CJ should be kind of speaking to for just questions and practice, and I made the cut. And just through that and meeting them, I got to know CJ a bit more, and as time went on, we just became good group of friends really. All I think it helps when you're kind of all pointing in the same kind of direction, then it's easier to move forward as a group as opposed to individually.
Definitely. So that sort of established the groundworks, you could say, of what we've got today.
Oh, definitely, definitely. And whenever we met up, it wasn't just us talking about business or holding back. There was a combination of just chatting, because we are all into fitness and sports in different ways. And me and CJ are really into martial arts. And then we were all kind of also into stuttering. So with our meetups, there were genuinely just a bunch of friends meeting up. And through like just their conversations, and they had the ideas of taking the charity over the line. They're pretty serious. Then I kind of jumped on. And to be honest, they were doing pretty much the majority of the work for quite a bit of time, but I was always there with the forum. So before lockdown, we were like meeting up face to face with people in London. So we had we got a kind donation for a WeWork space in Waterloo. So we used to meet up there, and they used to have free breakout areas, pool table, ping pong, free beer. And we used to meet up every 2 weeks. I just saw your face light up there.
Yeah, free beer. Yeah.
Perfect student reaction. And that went on for some time, but unfortunately, due to COVID, we had to stop doing that. And that's essentially why we switched online. And we kind of reached a different type of audience that way.
Yeah, and I would arguably say from my experience that Stop Holding Back has kind of thrived through lockdown.
Yeah, I'd say the same, because the way we were built, because essentially, we are pretty small. There's only three of us, but it means that if we have an idea, then we can get something done really quickly. There is less admin-y things, or there isn't really like a chain of command. This is more, I'll just pop a message in the group saying, guys, like, shall we try this? Because we might as well. And the other two will be like, yeah, sure. And then that's it. But in maybe another organization or another charity, there may be a bit more of like an approvals process to go through to get kind of your sign off from whoever's in charge to actually get things over the line. So I think eventually some of the other forums, they clocked on and started to actually run like video conferencing things themselves. because as lockdown went on, it wasn't clear when we would be able to meet face to face again. But because of the way we were built, we were in there straight away and we had time. So we just went, let's just go daily, because now is the time when people aren't doing much. So this is the best time to actually get their attention. And that led to the daily podcast, the daily show that we ran from March till around July, August. Then more significantly, the speech clubs, the reading clubs, that literally just started off as a call we used to have to each other every morning and just opened it up to everyone else. So it kind of worked out beautifully.
Yeah, it definitely did. And just to go back a little bit, when you talk about how there's not really any higher command or anything in Stop Running Back, I think that sort of is reflected in the community feel. And yeah. I think from attending speech clubs, reading clubs, and just seeing the groups and forums, everyone is treated very much the same. Everyone's supported and there's no hierarchy or anything along those lines.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I think it's easier to implement that kind of thing in a smaller operation. Obviously, when things start to grow a bit, there has to be some element of leadership structure. Yeah. And we do have that in the sense that there's a few of us is saying, yeah, like, let's do this or let's not do this or discontinue. But we do feel that we got a good balance at the moment. And say if yourself or if Leo want to change something or do anything, then we just say, yeah, sure, because we trust you guys. And like some of the forums have literally turned into your babies. So we feel that, yeah, just carry on with what you're doing. And if you want to tweak or personalize things, then go for it.
As ultimately, when you've got a stutter or run a stuttering charity, it's about make sure people's voices are heard.
Yeah, obviously, yeah. Because that's kind of the problem with stuttering, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's been quite interesting the past few years, like working in this type of environment, because prior to this, I would not have imagined myself doing something like I still remember, I think like 8-9 years ago, I would I think I had like a drunk conversation with a friend once and said, man, it'd be really cool in the future if I could run something that could help other people with stuttering. And it was obviously just something that I was saying in the moment, but it was always there in the back of my mind. But then I always felt that first I needed to actually find a way to help myself first and take myself to a level that was actually like exceeding any of my expectations. And then I could actually help other people reach their own goals as well. Because I think the problem is you have like with stuttering, people self-impose barriers or their own ceilings as to what they can achieve.
Yeah.
And then try too early to maybe help people, but they are limited in their own expectations. And if you try to actually go too early and help people, then you can, in an indirect way, maybe not open up other people to their own limitless expectations. Because generally, when you have someone who's a high achiever, etc., you always say the sky's the limit.
Yeah.
But that was never a word that was associated with someone who stutters, even if they had every other credential or criteria. Because communication is such a massive part of being successful, because it's a core skill. If you can't share your ideas and thoughts in an effective way, then you will not be able to actually rise up in the career that you choose to embark on or the type of field, because it's all about expressing ideas. And if it's all stuck in your head, then it will either stay there or it will either be exploited by someone else.
Definitely is. When it comes to stuttering, as we both know, without that right surrounding, and not just the support, but the right support for you, then your progress can be hindered. It absolutely can be. So with your journey, obviously you've reached this point now when you're mentoring, you're coaching, when you're a massive success in the world of Toastmasters. But how did this all begin? Like, if we go back, obviously you're from Sri Lanka originally. Is it the Tamil? Tamil, I'm not sure how to pronounce it exactly.
Tamil. I was actually born here. My parents came to the UK a few months before I was born via Africa. So they lived in Nigeria for some years. But essentially there was a civil war in Sri Lanka. Tamils weren't in like a safe place. So quite a few Tamils escaped the country. So I've got cousins all over the world, Australia, America, Canada, some in India. I've got friends who got family in like France, Denmark, Germany. So these are all first cousins. So all their parents, their generation, their siblings, just literally scattered all over the world. When I was growing up, there was a mixture of things. So there was my parents trying to acclimatize to the country. Then B, I started speaking when I was two, and I started to actually block and stuff when I was four. So I was actually fluent for 2 years, and it came as a bit of a shock for my parents, because I had been chatty before that, did like speech therapy and all that kind of stuff. I didn't have any issues socializing. Fortunately, I was born in October, so I tended to be amongst the oldest in my class groups growing up. So I didn't have like that. I wasn't held back in that sense. I had an older brother. I always believed that if anything happened, if I got bullied, I'd be saved by my older brother. That's probably false, but yeah. Because he'd probably be involved in the bullying, but but I always had that belief that, don't worry, I have an older brother, he would save me if anything happened. And yes, I just grew up, and speech therapy didn't really make a difference to my speech, as my parents found, which is quite common actually, because I understand now that speech therapy, they deal with the social development a lot more, because that's kind of key to stopping the stuttering mindset from developing. But I was still blocking and freezing. So I ended up stopping speech therapy, and I went to drama school. My older brother was getting involved in it at the time. I think he was like 11. So I went when I was 6, 7. It was just poetry reading, and I enjoyed it. I did it for about 9 to 10 years. Went through like all the exams and stuff, and I was quite good at, actually. I got really good scores because it was essentially memorizing poems and passages, then saying it, but then acting it out. But we literally had like 3-4 months to memorize a poem, then iron out the stuttering, and then perform. Yeah. So it isn't like something that you could actively transfer into conversation, but it gave me that confidence growing up, and it gave me like a nice like a nice area where I could actually speak fluently. Even if I was struggling outside of that, it was quite nice to have that comfort zone. Eventually growing up, teens obviously you become more self-conscious about stuttering, start to avoid situations where you gotta speak in class. So I used to, so like, you know, when the teacher made people read, I would take tactical toilet breaks, like maybe three people before, or pretend to sneeze. And I think I thought at the time that I was a good actor, but probably the teacher also knew as well, and just allowed me to skip the reading. And I think eventually, as I got older, I would speak to the teachers at the start of the year, and I would say, hey, like, I've got speech impediments, so can you please exclude me from the class reading? Because I used to feel really stressed out in those moments, so I couldn't really concentrate. And it actually affected like the subjects I would choose as you progress through school. Oh. Yeah, so I end up choosing like things like chemistry and math and stuff like that. But it would have been nice to actually do something like history that I was really, really interested in. But that involved obviously quite a bit of reading out loud. And for me, that was a red zone. Then same thing carried on, went to university as well. But along that way, I was involved in sports and I was quite vocal on the football pitch. So I did have that inner sense of trying to express myself and taking responsibility. So I started to do a bit of that when I was in university with football, taking charge of teams, ended up taking roles in society. So I became at one point a vice president and the next year treasurer of Shaolin Kung Fu Society. So I got into martial arts at that time. That led me to Thai boxing, which I did for about 8 years. And then, yeah, so this pattern carried on really. But I had a real turning point actually when I was 22 and my grandma passed away. So she brought me up. So she came over with my granddad when I was 2 weeks or a week old or something. So she brought me up while my parents worked and she passed away. And that really hit me hard to a point where I remember when I found out the news, I couldn't say a word. I tried to, so at that point I was doing a placement. So I went to tell my colleague that I have to leave and go to the hospital, but I couldn't actually speak. So I literally had to get some paper and write down what happened because I was in so much shock that not a single sound came out for the next 3-4 hours. Like every point I was trying to speak on the way to the hospital, I could not get a single sound out. Like that whole period was quite tough. Then when it came to the funeral in front of 100, 150 people, I tried to give a speech, but the same thing happened. And I was 22 years old, but I just burst into tears in front of everyone. And I think that was a turning point where, because I felt like the speech had been an obstacle for so long, but it had let me down at too many key moments. So that's when I started to actually think, all right, so I've got to change a few things now. I finished off the placement that I was on and I literally had like a blank slate. I saved up all of the money I earned and spent the next few months traveling. First trip was two and a half months in Thailand. Thailand, Thai boxing. And there just wanted to go somewhere completely different, immerse myself in the culture and enjoyed it, grew a lot, then went a few other places the following year. Ended up going back to, Sri Lanka for the first time with my mum, and it was her first time back in like 28 years. had a great experience there. Then got into working again, and through this time I started to push myself in different ways. Ended up coaching football full time for 2 years, kids aged 5 to 17, and really enjoyed it. Loads of speaking opportunities, built up really good confidence in my communication. I used to struggle with parents, like sometimes if they were a bit kind of tense and everything, because sometimes you have to tell off their kid in front of the parents, and the parents think their kid is an angel. So sometimes you, in that moment, you have to give them bad news. I did that for 2 years, then ended up getting back into finance, but then I decided to move to Birmingham. I got a chance to move up there. I always told myself that by the time I was 26, I wanted to be out of my parents' house, just to be independent and learn to grow up and everything. And I think I moved out about 3-4 months before my 26th birthday. And yeah, just spent 4 years up there, 4.5 years, different place, growing up, a bit more responsibility. And then at work, I was doing well. Then I had an honest conversation with my manager after about a year. He just said, look, I think you're great and everything, but if you want to progress in like your career and just in your life in general, you have to find a way to be able to effectively communicate in front of a senior people. And I know you're confident despite your stutter, but I think that there is potential here for you to step that up. I said, Paul, thank you very much. I really appreciate that. And then I started to just research a few things. I found one course at Birmingham University that was free. Did that for a few months, met a few people. That was, I think, it was the first time I was getting involved in stuttering forums since I was like 18, before, as in when I did NHS stuff. And then I told my mum casually about it, and then she got quite excited because it was the first time in about 10 years or so that I actually started to think about stuttering courses and that kind of stuff. Then she found another course that was in Birmingham. So she said, just try it out, see how it goes. I said, oh yeah, sure. Yeah. And then it was like a 10 minute walk from my flat as well. So I didn't really have an excuse. Went there, really enjoyed it, gained a lot, made some friends there. And that's actually where I met AO as well. So I've come back around full circle to that first question you asked me.
And there we have the man you are today.
There's a lot of stuff that happened in between, obviously. But in terms of the route that I took to get to this point, people think like it's things that I have achieved are pretty cool. But it's been like spread out across a 9-10 year period with a lot of hard work in between. I always tell people that that takes a lot of hard work. There'll be times I'll be going to Toastmaster meetups in the morning, 7 a.m. before work for 1.5 hours, then going to work, and some after work. I'd be traveling around London or the country because I started to get involved in some of their different events, and there were different opportunities to speak, and I was always interested in pushing myself. And I guess you understand it as well. When you push yourself and you find success, you kind of seek out the next challenge.
Yeah, you do.
And that was the route I was on. And it was a lot of fun, really rewarding. And it was bit by bit, very slowly, making a lot of change to who I was and the way I communicated.
And obviously, when it comes to anything, the amount of work and graft is not what people see. People might see what's just above the surface or then the end result, but it takes a lot more than what anyone really realizes to actually get to a point where you've reached that success. And that's it in anything, whether it's speech, sport, whatever.
If you think of brands and stuff, it isn't marketable, like the best trainers and everything. They're quite stylish and sleek and they allow you to run fast or whatever. But have you commonly heard the fact that, oh, so if you wear these, then they will allow you to do a lot of hard work over a period of time, and things like hard work and grit and that kind of stuff. Do you like the core foundations of any person who's successful in whatever they do? But it's always a tendency to cherry pick the nice stuff. And it obviously gives like a light version of what they've achieved, but I don't think it does justice to the entire journey.
Absolutely, as you tend to be working a lot harder and graft a lot more than, the time taken to work hard and reach the point is often 10 times longer than the actual peak or summit itself.
Yeah, definitely. And because of the way that we are built, we do tend to remember the big moments as opposed to the entire journey. And it's important to actually remember how we got to a certain point, because that is essentially what's going to keep us there. If we start to get too ahead of ourselves at times, then it can have a detrimental effect, because even though I've kind of achieved a few things that I'm pretty proud of, there's still a lot more that I'm seeking out, a lot more challenges out there. So I have to keep aiming for them in the same methodical way that I have been over the last 4 or 5 years now.
And how do you keep yourself focused and motivated? I think we're very similar in the fact that we are looking for these new challenges, new ways to step out of the comfort zones. But how do you keep yourself going?
The first thing is, like, whatever you want to challenge yourself in, there has to be some element of fun. Because if we don't enjoy it, then we aren't going to enjoy the experience, and it will just be a waste of time. Some people could argue that things like going to the gym or running and stuff, it isn't enjoyable. That is true to some extent, but if you can find some sense of enjoyment amongst the challenge, then that's a vital ingredient. The second thing is I plan. So I don't go about cramming in everything within a certain period and trying to burn out quickly. I would give myself time and opportunities to taper down and take breaks and just spend time with people, etc. I'm pretty good with my calendar at the moment. I'm planning ahead. I've already got things in there for Jan and Feb. So then I have a structure there. And then the last key thing is accountability. And that involves like just telling people and even putting on paper, because that has now like created a promise between yourself and the people around you. That, okay, so I've set this challenge, I'm going to do it, or I have this goal, I'm going to work towards achieving it. Classic example was my recent 100 miles in October run. If I didn't tell people about it, then that would not have been achieved, because There were so many days where I was up in the morning and I thought, screw this. But then I had to because I had a schedule to keep up to finish the target. And then even on that day when I did the 30 miles, there were so many opportunities to drop out, so many excuses that I could have used, so many points, but I couldn't because I had already made myself accountable. And that pushed me on because I would have felt like a failure if I didn't carry on when I knew that I had it there. Like if I was physically unable, or if my foot had fallen off and it was dangling, and then that's a completely different story. But I told myself, even if you have to stay here till 12 a.m., you're going to finish it. So I was just pushing on, and I would not have done that if I didn't have that accountability.
Definitely. As we spoke before a lot about this, there's a lot of parallels between sport and working on your speech, as everything you just talked about can completely relate to both of those journeys, whether it's a fitness journey, a speech journey, or anything really.
Yeah, definitely, because it isn't something that you can change overnight. It takes considerable amount of time, practice, and sometimes there are things that you have to do on days where you just don't feel like it. And I always tell people that if you can find a way to get what you need done on your bad days, then that's a good sign of progress, because you're more likely to have more like bad days than good days. There's always going to be some kind of pain in your ankle or your knee or your back. You can always find some pain. I always think if you really look for it and try hard, you can always find an excuse somewhere and a reason to not do something. And if we can actually get our practices done or get that run done on those days, then that's a good sign of progress. And it isn't like anything complicated. It's just like pushing past the laziness and all of the internal voices that are telling you just to hit the snooze button for the fifth time, or take a day off.
And it is very tempting. Of course it is very tempting, but it's having that, in my eyes, the discipline, having that level of discipline and, well, wanting it more. That's a quote by Jeffrey Starb that I will always remember. You got to want it more than you don't want it. If you
like that,
want to run faster more than you don't want to run faster, then you will get out and go for a run. If you want to speak fluently more than you don't want to speak fluently, then you will. And that quote has stayed with me since the first interview I did with him. And I apply that to my everyday life.
Definitely, definitely. Like I had a really cool sparkle moment where it hit me a few weeks ago. I think it was in the second week of the October running, where I did a run on the Friday and I ended up doing 7 miles or something, and I wasn't happy with it because I finished it and I thought I could have done a bit more, but I chose to actually to call it a day that day. Then it didn't sit right with me that evening, so the next morning I was up again and I did 11 miles to make up for it, and that felt really, really good. And then I was up again the next day and I did an extra 10, because just to counteract that, the shortfall on the Friday, just that feeling of I had set an objective but I didn't achieve it that day. And then if I carried on with this behavior, then that would not have taken me to the end of the 100 miles by the month. So I had to literally go big and do the opposite And because of that decision I made on the Saturday, I completed 28 miles that weekend. And that set me in good stride for the weekend after, when I did the 30 in the one day.
Yeah, absolutely. As I can't imagine doing 30 in a day at all. So I have been starting to run again now with the accountability of my flatmates. There's three of us, we've been doing it together, which always helps. But I can't imagine doing that. And like you said, if you didn't, it could be a very slippery slope, you know, the domino effect from one day to another. And that's something that you want to avoid in general.
People don't understand that sometimes when you make a decision about a certain thing, it could be something about kind of training or food or any type of thing. And if you choose the easy way out for that particular thing, it can actually have an effect on your other decisions. In the same way, if you get into the habit of actually picking the harder option or the option that will cause a bit more discomfort, but that will essentially lead to more benefit. And if you get into that habit, then that can actually have a more positive effect on every other choice. And it could be simple things like just running a bit more or getting up a bit earlier. And the most important thing is, if you have a goal or a challenge, instead of waiting to start it on the Monday, just make a start now. Just get some paper, make some notes, and just start thinking about things straight away, because there are always opportunities to put things off till the next day.
All right, definitely. And when you're finding these things, it's important to do things that are meaningful to you as well, I think.
Yeah, definitely. If they are meaningful to you, if they're fun, and if in some way they can actually benefit you, then that's a perfect combination. There are so many things out there that give us that instant gratification or that instant buzz from a TV show or a certain type of food. If it's a bad food, you still get that buzz from the taste. And I think it's important to have a balance, because I'm into food and good food and a bit of the bad food, but I ensure that the balance is more weighted to the good food. In the same way, I stream Netflix shows and that kind of stuff, but I put a cap on it and make sure that I get my podcast stuff done, my public speaking stuff done, work with a charity, because that stuff's important. And the other stuff is like ancillary things that are good for downtime and relaxing. But if you have too much downtime, then it's impossible to get anything done.
I agree. So let's create a completely hypothetical situation that a certain university student spent about 7 hours of his day yesterday watching the True Geordie podcasts. What advice would you give to him to not spend 7 hours of his Sunday watching the True Geordie podcast? It's hypothetical completely.
That's a tough one, because I'm actually a fan of True Geordie, and I do watch The Kickoff as well. That's a good show that he hosts. I would say, if that hypothetical person, let's call him Callum, if he spent 7 hours watching the True Geordie podcast, first of all, I would ask, what did he gain from the podcast? Because it's good at entertainment, but is there anything that he could pick up? Because hypothetically, if he's a podcaster, then is there anything in there that may strike him from, like, one of the things they do really, really well that I like is the lighting.
Yeah.
It's all dark, but then there's this light that's on each person, but the room is dark, and I'm a fan of their table. I end up buying a similar type computer table here. And then you can think about kind of how they communicate and what their tone is, etc. But beyond that, 7 hours is a long time. Probably make a list of the other things that he may have on his plate and try to tick them off in that period. I'm into fitness and stuff, and sometimes if I'm putting on like a long podcast to watch or film, then I would do press ups and squats at the same time, and I'll just do them in sets of 10 or 20, take a long break, then do them again, and do that throughout. Even if you're watching like a 2-3 hour podcast or a 7 hour, do something else, like tidy your room at the same time. It isn't as straightforward as saying stop that could completely, but you can work around it.
Yeah, definitely. I think the hypothetical Callum will take that advice very well. It's yesterday learning all about Jeffrey Epstein and Madeleine McCann conspiracies, and then about undercover coppers. It was quite a productive day. It made me want to do more conspiracy theory podcasts, but that's a story for another day. And now, one of my last questions, again about advice, this is the one I ask all my guests, is what advice would you give to my listeners?
That's kind of a tough question, because I try not to be preachy or just to share advice all the time, because it can come off as patronizing or preachy about personal development and that kind of stuff. So I would actually share instead something that I learned, just to pursue something that brings a bit of excitement to you, and that could be something as small as just starting a blog about story writing, or taking up an interest, or cooking, or that kind of stuff, and turning that into some kind of a passion where you can start to explore different types of recipes or styles, etc. Because alongside your actual job, or if you're doing a course, it's always good to fill the rest of your time with some other things that can actually bring you some happiness. And just do that, because it's easy to just do your job and then spend the rest of your time streaming shows, etc. That's what I would say, because if we can actually start to do different things, then you can actually fill your weeks with a bit more buzz, and you end up being a bit of a happier person, I think, if we are working on things that excite us, like podcasting for example. Then that shines through in your attitude and the way you think and the way you speak.
It does, absolutely. And to end, why don't you talk a little bit about the Underdog Way podcast?
All right, cool. So I started a podcast back in July this year, where I interview people who have experienced challenges or experienced successes and have been an underdog in their own way at certain points, and they share their stories, because we see people on TV or films, etc., and think, wow, like, these guys are great, but they have had their own origin story.
Yeah.
And it's filled with a lot of obstacles, a lot of ups and downs, etc. So it's a cool podcast. Got some interesting variety of people in there, from comedians experiencing anxiety, people who started like us, investment bankers in Syria during the ISIS war, public speakers as well, and different people, different successes, same message, persevering through their own types of obstacles. And yeah, it's really, really good. Finishing season one soon. We'll take a break and back with season two afterwards. And that's essentially it.
Yeah, I look forward to it. As one of my personal favorite episodes was the investment banker in Syria, because
yeah,
I was hooked on every word. His experiences is just, there's no words for it. There's absolutely no words.
Very, very interesting.
Oh, well, Ruben, thank you for coming on the show. I know we've been meaning to do this for a long time. You've been on my hit list from the start.
Well, you got me finally.
Yeah.
But I think it's good that we did this now, because there is a different feel when you have kind of spent some time with someone and you have a bit more of a natural relationship with them already. So it's a bit more of a flowing conversation. So I really enjoyed this, Callum.
Yeah, no worries. And just for our listeners to know, we've probably been friends since the start of lockdown, isn't that? Probably when we first met.
Yeah, so properly when, I guess through forums and just your repeated attendance in terms of how we were doing things. And it was a good way for different people experiencing stuttering to actually meet people informally, practice their speech, but also have healthy company during a tough time for everyone.
Yeah, definitely. As for me, Stop Running Back was one of the essential parts, you could say, of my lockdown. It was fundamentally important, and yeah, it got me to where I am today, I think is a safe thing to say.
Fantastic. Thank you very much for the kind words, Callum.
No worries. I know we'll speak again soon, but thank you again for coming on. It's been nice actually hearing your story.
No worries, Callum. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it. And that's it. Thank you very much for listening on to episode 11 of the Underdog Way podcast with me, Ruben Pillai. I look forward to bringing to you episode 12, the season finale, which will be a medley of some of the best bits from the season so far. Thank you for supporting and coming with me on this journey. I really appreciate it. And I hope you've enjoyed and gained something from this experience as much as I have. Stay blessed and stay safe. And thank you very, very much again.